This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. Get involved with the debate by tweeting at Blue Moon Podcast and check out exclusive interviews on bluemoonpodcast.com. It's your club and this is your show.
Three games to go and Manchester City have the slight advantage in the Premier League with all things equal at this stage. Two huge hurdles have been cleared this week as Pep Guardiola's side emerged victorious against Tottenham and in a very tense Manchester derby. So now it's on to what will no doubt be another nervy game, this time with Burnley. On today's Blue Moon podcast, we'll be looking at the mental strength City have shown to bounce back from the manner of the Champions League exit to Spurs. We'll also be hearing from former City striker Nicolas Anelka and ex-City midfielder Ayle Berkovic. Plus, we'll preview that trip to Turf Moor. Get your questions sent in for next week's Ask the Panel by tweeting at Blue Moon Podcast or emailing through the website bluemoonpodcast.com. I'm your host David Mooney and I'm joined in the studio by two of the biggest birds you can find. Gaz?
What was that?
Maybe you just won a derby.
Wasn't expecting that at all. And setting the tone there, Casey, how are you doing?
I have no idea what to do now. Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah.
So what is that? Is it like a...
It's a party blower.
Excellent. I think we need to be very wary of shocking me while I've got headphones on like that again. But, you know, here we go. Yeah, so title race then. Everything's looking hunky-dory these days.
Yeah, couldn't have gone any better, could it? It's funny, like, people are saying we're definite favourites now. I mean, if we end up winning the last three games, how many is that in a row?
17.
Four, I'd say it's 14 now, so yeah.
Right.
So that's on to 17, which is...
still a big ask, isn't it? You know, in order to do it. But
It's ridiculous, and I think the media are just sort of like treating Burnley and Leicester as if they're nothing.
Yeah. I mean, particularly with the Burnley game being away as well. But I think it's more likely that... Last night made it more likely that Liverpool will drop points now at some point.
What, just because of games. The karma of the universe?
No, just because it. But keep applying pressure.
My next question was going to be: have City now got one hand on the trophy after those two wins?
No. I was asked, just sat around with Tom and Neil, who also do the podcast, earlier today, and somebody who doesn't know anything about football asked us, not saying that we do, like, but asked us, well, what are the chances? And I still said it was 50-50. Between us and Liverpool, and they were like, no, it's way more heavily weighted in our favour. And when you compare the fixtures, and take on your point about penalty, red card or whatever, I think when you take into account the fixtures, it has to be, even with us having the point, those fixtures are a lot tougher.
Yeah, but that's what it'll be. I mean, if you look at title races in the past, where points get dropped, they're always in random places.
But this isn't like a normal title race, is it?
Whoever finishes second is going to have the record tally for second place. So it's not a normal year.
Well, whoever finishes second will more than likely have the third highest points total ever.
Yeah.
Like, full stop.
Yeah.
It's not like a normal title race this year. There's so many games that you've watched of Liverpool's where they should have been nowhere near picking up points. And they've just got away with it and got away with it and got away with it and got away with it. But now they don't look like they're getting away with it. They just look like they've got...
If City and Liverpool both play to their, you know, or anything close to their ability over the next three games, then they'll both get 9 points.
But my point is, coming down to like the red card or penalty kick moment that you're on about, it's more likely to happen against Burnley or Leicester, is my point.
Than Huddersfield or Newcastle.
Yeah, because Burnley, you know, we've not got a great record at Turf Moor. And Leicester have got a pretty good record against us at our place. I get your point that it will come down to an individual moment, but I think you need to also take into account the fixture list that it's more likely to happen in those games than it is against Huddersfield, who are, you know, you'd be arguing are in the top five, but sorry, bottom five worst Premier League teams.
Huddersfield
of all time.
Bobbins, but Wolves aren't a bad side, are they?
No, Wolves aren't a bad side, but it's a nice time to be playing them, isn't it?
Well, they might be going for the Europa League spot last game of the season. So, but isn't that all nonsense anyway about teams fighting for something? It's not true that they're more likely to get a result that's sort of bared out.
No, yeah, because generally it's more like if they had the FA Cup final, I'd be more worried that they wouldn't turn up. But I think because they've not got that as a distraction, I think there is a better potential of Wolves actually doing something in the last game of the season.
Well, looking at the last week then, Spurs and United, how tense were those two games, Gaz?
Spurs one was tense. And I remember jumping around my room last night when we scored against United, but that was probably more the sort of context of it being a derby as well.
But the Spurs one was incredibly tense for the last half an hour. But up until that point, it felt like that we were pretty in control, did you not think?
Most of Spurs' chances, though, came in the first half.
Yeah, even so, it felt like, because of the way that we started the game, it felt like, well, even if they get one, we've got another one in us.
Yeah.
We were stood chatting in the first... We were laughing and joking in the first half. Mm. It was only when it got to the second half where, where we were sort of... no one was saying anything and everyone was just... Well, you kept turning around to me every 2 minutes and just going, he stopped reffing the game.
I remember. The referee was really, really winding me up in the last...
Oh, he was atrocious.
Last 10 minutes or so.
Oh, God,
he was
absolutely atrocious, yeah.
And missing everything. And that's... yeah, and I remember that made you think something's going to happen here.
Yeah.
The Derby win as well, it's now three wins in a row for City at Old Trafford. It's the first time that's ever been done in the Premier League for a single manager. Guardiola's managed that for the first time. It's kind of... it's weird where the two sides are, do you not think? Because, I mean, even when City became good, I never saw it being that sort of turnaround.
We've won 7 out of 11 there.
Yeah.
And we've taken more points off United at Old Trafford than any other side in the Premier League. And Dave Silva's won the most games at Old Trafford than any other visiting player.
Is that right? In the whole Premier League era?
Yeah, he's won. Yeah, yeah.
And we hadn't won there until...
2008.
Yeah,
that's mad. And, as well, that's the first time United have lost 2-0 at Old Trafford in the Premier League.
Yeah, I heard that before.
Which is bizarre.
And 2011 must have been the first time they'd lost 6-1 there as well. So,
even in the Sven one, like, you think we were leading
2-0 with seconds to go.
Yeah.
I'd never thought of that. I mean, did you honestly ever envisage a time where going to Old Trafford wouldn't be so stress-inducing?
I don't know. I mean, what I've been saying all week, I was really unhappy with how people were talking about us going to United and probably winning and probably going to win. Like, I mean, we've been a better team than them for a while now, but I can't remember going to an Old Trafford derby where people were saying,
"Nah,
like City will probably win," as opposed to
the 3-0 under Moyes. I knew we were going to win turning up, and I've not been like that. And I tell you another one as well where I knew we were going to win, even though we lost the league. The Mancini one, when it was in his final season.
No, I had a feeling there, but that's different from, like, the consensus was City are going to go to Old Trafford and win.
In the Moyes season, we were definitely turning up Old Trafford.
Yeah, I felt that year, but I agree with you, Gat. This is the first year since then that year aside, I've never had that feeling.
Yeah. And I was really wary all week. It's still United.
I don't think there's been anything, like, because I was wary of United, but I don't think there's been any difference in attitude in the past three seasons. We've gone to Old Trafford in the past 3 years, not being cocksure that we're going to win, but we've been favourites in the past 3 years and strong favourites. I'd say.
I don't know if we've been favourites over the draw. Like say the one last year, where we essentially won the title there and then, December. That game was really...
It was on a knife edge,
built
I think.
Up,
in,
yeah,
in
it,
the build
it, 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 it was like, built you know, up, but, this but, is a contest. Last night wasn't built,
yeah,
as, a
fair enough.
Built as a contest.
It was, but there was always... I was nervous last night, like, really nervous. I don't think there was anyone that wasn't.
But I was nervous in the context of the title race more than the game itself. It suddenly dawned on me that this was... I remember back to the days when City playing United, the chance to damage their title hunt, and that was the kind of bonus. And the tables had turned. It was United's chance to do that back.
It was because they got battered 4-0 by Everton, I was just like, oh, that's the worst result that could possibly happen for us.
Yeah, I thought that. Like, you don't want the...
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
But you expected a reaction off them last night, but there wasn't one. Their last shot on target was in the 6th minute of the game.
They played, I mean, not to talk about United, but they played like you'd imagine a team under fire to play, and this always happens. And I remember, like, this happened a lot under when we were having a dodgy year under the first year of Guardiola. The first 20 minutes, you fly out the blocks because you're like, I'm going to show you. But it's like, it's kind of after that point where you sort of tell, like, what sort
where the
of
issues
state
are.
A team's at. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, because you can't be, like, winning that tackle all the way through the game. And we ended up just...
Well,
taking over the game because
well,
all
we,
their problems.
We did lose the midfield in the first half. I said it to you
at half time. No one was putting the foot on the ball, and like people will say, like I love Fernandinho and he's absolutely amazing. But I was pretty surprised when people were saying he was our best player until he went off.
Well, he made some good tackles, didn't he?
Yeah, but good tackles because he's not in the right place and he's not putting his foot on the ball. I genuinely didn't think Fernandinho was anywhere near his normal level last night, and I think he needed to be. It was either Gundogan needed to be taken off because he was completely ineffective next to Fernandinho, or Fernandinho needed coming off anyway because no one was putting the foot on the ball in midfield. Fernandinho tackling, defensive organisation, that clearance in the first, that all absolutely brilliant. I'm not taking that away from him, but there's so much more to Fernandinho that he wasn't showing us yesterday.
We were saying, weren't we? But we couldn't get Bernardo into the game because he wasn't playing in midfield. And the conversation I was having, like, not just with yourself, but other friends over sort of WhatsApp was like, when's he going to do it?
When's he going to move him inside?
Yeah, or more to the point, when's he going to make this positive change? Yeah, and everyone thought it would be Gundogan coming off, probably. And then you make the positive change. But
you made a great point at half-time. You just said, I don't know exactly what he's going to do, but he's going to outthink Solskjaer here. That's literally what you said word for word at half time, and you were dead right.
But it was kind of forced as well, wasn't it? But the good thing is, the really good thing he did is when Fernandinho got that knock, he thought, right, I'm going to take this opportunity now. And you can even see Fernandinho didn't really want to come off, did he?
And it's not like Guardiola to make that sort of change.
Yeah.
It's quite rare for him to make early changes.
I don't think he wanted to spend a few, because the game was that kind of game. He didn't want to sort of spend a few minutes without him off the pitch as well, did he? It was like, right, make the change now. And that brought Bernardo into the middle. And then after that point, we were just...
He's just incredible.
I was going to ask about him because, I mean, he scored the opening goal. He has been one of City's key players this season. There's no doubt about it.
He's been absolutely unbelievable. And like his first half last night, by his incredibly high standards, wasn't particularly great. But then in the second half, he just turned it on. And... The thing with Bernardo as well, he looks like he should be slow, and he picks the ball up and it's just like somebody's just put a motorboat on the back of him, and he just tears off. And I think that's half of it. Nobody that technically good should also be that fast, because it's just not fair. Like, he's absolutely incredible the way that he can just sort of nip it past people, and he's for a little bloke, he's really strong, and he very, very rarely loses the ball. And I just thought, like, I was obviously, your initial reaction when Bernardo scored was like, you know,
relief.
You know, yes, get in there, go mad. But like, then you follow that up with, oh, I'm glad it was him. Like, and I have that with him and Sterling at the minute. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm glad it's them. Like, I really, really want both of them to do really well, just because of, for all intents and purposes, them two have carried the second half of this season, I think.
Let's talk about Gundogan as well, because as soon as he was put into that anchoring role, we saw a completely different version of him, didn't we, Gaz?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, he struggles to get involved in the game in the first half. I don't think he really. It was hard to sort of figure out what his role was supposed to be in the first half. Whether he was supposed to be sort of one of the two sitting. Playing further forward.
I was thinking about this, because usually when he's playing the further forward, he's usually on the left in place of Silva. And I can't remember him playing the right of a three. Like, I might be wrong, even though he's right. I can't remember him playing the right of a three. And he looked a bit lost in that sort of position, at least.
And sort of Fernandinho was kind of getting in his way a bit.
Yeah.
They were, to be fair to them both, they were kind of getting in each other's way a bit, playing out in that first half. And he was much better in the set. He's like, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, like, for the past 3 years, people have been talking about Fernandinho's replacement. And I know Gundogan's he's going at 28 or whatever, but like, I think you're not going to get anyone better than him, really.
They're probably going to lose him as well.
He's going in the summer, isn't he?
Do you think?
Yeah, well, he's only got 1 year left
on
his contract.
No, I know that, but I just wonder for like, whatever fee you'd get for him, if you were at the club, would you just sort of think, well...
I'd keep him for the extra year. But like I said that about Tevez, and we should have done.
I think with Tevez...
It was more the ego.
I think they really had to take things quite far to get Tevez to stay for one more year, and I think there was just an understanding from absolutely everyone all involved.
Yeah. Never going to happen.
Yeah, this is the last year.
Yeah, but it was
but it'd only been able twice.
But even at the time, like $10 million for him was ridiculous at the time.
No, but I think there was just a gentleman's agreement between everyone there.
But realistically are you going to get from Gundogan with a year left on his contract, $20 million?
Well, that's it. I mean, I'm not. I don't run the figures because his wages as well taken into account, and somebody will be looking at it on the spreadsheet. But if it was those kind of figures, you'd say, yeah, just keep him.
Yeah.
Or in that time, try and get him to sign a contract extension because.
He's probably not going to get anybody better for the role. Yeah.
I just think he's gone, which is a great shame because I think he's been one of our best players over the past couple of months. I think he's been...
All season he's been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Right, well, this is what Pep Guardiola had to say after the derby against United. He starts being asked about the injury to Fernandinho.
Fernandinho was in the half-time, a little problems in both legs, in muscular. He played the second half and we fell down. I thought was not ready to continue. And that's why I thought in the half-time, you know, put Leroy maybe later. It was a little bit in advance, but the way he came in was... incredible. Gundogan in that position give us our game quicker, and Leroy, you know, attacking by line is a special player, so I'm so demanding to him, and sometimes I like to be critical on him because we know his potential and we want to help him to be more consistent in his game, not just in his actions with the ball, without too. And today was so good. He played in a high level
after last week's Champions League disappointment. How worried were you about the two games that followed so quickly, Tottenham and Manchester United?
I think that is the most difficult and most nice and most incredible detail for these players. So you cannot imagine the frustration, because of course Tottenham deserve all my respects and credit, but how tough will be for all of us, you know, go out for this beautiful competition like Champions League when we felt it was there. You know, for one hand not given, for one inch, it was really, really tough. And after 3 days later, we have Tottenham at home, and it was not the best performance, but the way, with the sunny sunshine, with incredible warm in the pitch, you know, to play to stay alive in the Premier League when Tottenham didn't play for almost anything because they are going to qualify for the Champions League, the pressure we felt and how we react, that is sometimes more important than all the other things you can read or you can write or you can say. So, and also after come here in our neighbours, United, the more prestigious team in England in the last, 20, 30 years and for the third time in a row winning, and especially today with a lot of pressure that we had, because we know if we lose nothing, it's incredible mentality, the strength, and every single action, do it, to commit, what they have to do, what we speak, what we're training. So it's fantastic. So I think Manchester City has to be so, so proud for these players. So proud. So we can go with a heads up everywhere, and that's why it's our fans are support us at the game against Champions League against Tottenham, and even the defeat that 3 days later support more than the date of the Champions League. That's happened because they know we don't lie. We know we are honest in our way to play, and that's why they are satisfied for the teams or for the players they have it right now. So it's good.
For a pledge of $2 a month, you can hear our weekly bonus show on a wide range of City topics. There's more details on patreon.com/bluemoonpodcast.
Pep Guardiola speaking after the derby there. It was interesting to hear what he had to say about Leroy Sané and that kind of admission that he'd been a bit heavy-handed with him.
I think he has been. don't get me wrong, I've been a critic of Sane probably more than most this year, in terms of what he hasn't been offering, and in certain games he's looked disinterested. But in terms of pure talent, it's just unbelievable. Like, he's on his day, he's unstoppable, and that, like, his pace is a completely different pace to like Bernardo and Raheem. It's just another level, because the way that he like sort of elegantly like opens his stride, it just absolutely terrifies defenders, and the way that he can stop. And I think, you know, goals like that he scored last night, you know, fair enough, you know, mistake or whatever, but I don't think many other players get in that position from there that can strike a ball like that. And I think that sort of threat, bearing in mind obviously Pep's a genius and where we are in the league, I do think it is a little bit weird that we've not utilised a weapon like that anywhere near as much as we should have done this season.
I was going to say, have you been surprised at how little he's started recently?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, myself included, sort of thought that Sane, you look at him and you think, one day, one season, he's going to be like, have like a 40 goal ridiculous season. And, you know, last year he was Young Player of the Year in the first team pretty much every week, and it was all sort of set up for it to be this year, and he's gone backwards in terms of his not in terms of his sort of profile in the team and such, and that shouldn't really have happened. And it's a bit odd, isn't it, how like there's been like a bit of there's a bit of hysteria you get. I mean, a lot of it's quite disingenuous about Foden and how he's handled him. And you think, well, he's handled him about right for like an 18-year-old. The one who probably should be further along in his development now is Sane, given you know, he had a year to warm up, then he had a year in the first team, and then now he's gone backwards. And you wonder where he got. I mean, you also get, you're talking about players who are going to go, you always get a feeling like, oh, is he?
I think it does always seem that he's not going to hang around. And you know, as much as, you know, I'm sure with most modern footballers these days, playing time isn't, you know, one of the main factors. The fact that he's not played has not helped the situation at all. No. I don't think.
And there's been plenty of games recently where, I mean, Bernardo's been having a good game out wide, but I don't think you get any more of him out wide. I think you get all the benefits of him still in midfield.
Mm.
And he's chosen to play him out wide and play other people in midfield.
But it's the fact as well that you've had a season where De Bruyne has been pretty much injured for the whole of it. You've had an opportunity there to have Bernardo in the middle with Sane out wide, and it just hasn't really been an option that Guardiola always picked.
Well, it's like, David Silva's the best player that's ever played for us, but there's been a lot of games where he's looked leggy inside, and you think, put Bernardo in the middle and put Sane on the wing. It doesn't seem that difficult, and it seems like he's not playing him out of stubbornness at times.
But hey, I mean, they are top of the league, so
exactly, and he is clearly a genius. But I think it's because when it's decisions like that, and you think maybe it'll affect the team longer term, that's what fans are taking into account. And plus, even just from a pure enjoyment point of view, who doesn't want to watch Leroy Sane? Like, he's absolutely beautiful to watch.
Mm.
And it's a shame he's not played more. And I hope we get a contract extension and that he he gets minimum 30 starts next season.
I was going to ask about the contract situation, because you kind of get the impression this last kind of half season isn't going to help.
No. And I've sort of gone over it. I don't know why he's not playing more. And don't get me wrong, he clearly isn't doing what he's told on the pitch at times, and I can completely understand that. But at the same time, it's not nowhere near warrants the level of behaviour that he's receiving, I don't think.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, I don't think Mahrez has done anywhere near as badly as some people make out, but like he seems to have got a lot of the same opportunities, hasn't he? When anything you can level at Sane this year, you could probably level at Mahrez quite easily as well.
Did he prove on Wednesday that Guardiola should have been looking at him more?
He proved that against Liverpool around Christmas time. I thought, like, I don't think the goal he scores against Liverpool, no other player in our squad scores that.
I don't know, if you look at it holistically, so he's been out of favour since Christmas, in which time, unless we would have beaten Newcastle had he played.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
You know, because I don't think Sané not being in the team led to the was losing against... do you know what? Maybe at... in fact, no, the White Hart Lane or whatever it's called, Tottenham Stadium, he should have been in that team, shouldn't he?
You mean in the first game?
That's
yeah, definitely.
Game he probably should have played in.
Yeah.
But apart from that, if you look at things holistically, you think should he have handled him better? It's like, well, couldn't have really have gone much better since he's been out of favour. So
I think the season as a whole hasn't, and obviously you don't really, you know, you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be questioning Pep considering the position that he's in. But at the end of the day, as a fan, you're thinking, like I say, you're also thinking about next season, and do you want Sané to stay? Like I quantified before, it's not the be-all and end-all these days for footballers, whether they're playing or not. But for the sake of losing Leroy Sané, in a lot of those games that we've won, we would have still won them if Sané was in the team as well. Like, it's not like if Sané had started it instead of Bernardo Silva that we'd have lost, you know, certain home games that we've played, I don't think.
He's probably also been a little bit the victim of the fact that Pep's always just trying to, almost for the sake of it, just trying to change the team and evolve and tweak things a bit. And that was last year's team, wasn't it? So I think he just wants to give opponents other things to think about, doesn't he?
And I suppose Sterling's kind of success on the left this season has not helped him either.
Sterling's just undroppable, isn't he?
Yeah. Gaz, you mentioned the Spurs first leg, the tie overall, obviously with that last minute sucker punch with the goal not being given with VAR. How do you think City have reacted in these last two games to that? Because I think it was interesting to hear Guardiola talk as well about the fact that actually it was a really hard thing to bounce back from.
Yeah, and they did it really quickly, didn't they? So like they started pushing Spurs all over the place, didn't they, in the first sort of 20 minutes, that's half an hour of that Premier League game.
They scored within four, so...
Yeah, I mean, they looked grumpy, didn't they? Like, but in a sort of good way. And, yeah, I mean, the response has been... I mean, it could have gone the other way. I mean, you sort of saw it last year with three bad results in a row. But he's obviously just got them to realise, look, you can still win a domestic treble, yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Does that? I mean, hearing Guardiola actually say that, does it put those the last two games into a new light, Casey?
Yeah, I just think it's mad because you're speaking to some City fans. Obviously, everyone's disappointed by what happened last week, and it still does sort of feel like the last two games, as good as we've been, it still does feel like we are in a bit of a hangover period. Do you not agree? Like, We started really quickly against Spurs, but then like last night against United, we didn't start well at all. It was a bit, and we finished the game badly against Spurs. It was just I think we've been a lot more in control of games like that earlier in the season.
It's hard though, isn't it? Because they are tough games, those two games anyway, against top six opponents. Mm. So you can't really. It's hard to tell whether it is a sort of hangover or not. I think, given how we finished against United, I think the good news is that
I think the way that we finished last night was there wasn't really that much concern. I've spoken to a couple of people that weren't celebrating until like the 93rd minute because of the tension, but it felt
time I got worried was when Pogba had that free kick right outside the area.
It was 1-0 at the time.
And Aguero would just hit the post, hadn't he?
Yeah, because I thought that was in a fantastic position for him to do something.
But Aguero hitting the post like that just did not get a mention anywhere afterwards. Like,
it's a brilliant chance. That, I mean, Aguero's performance against United was, for a striker, one of the most selfless and hard-working performances I've seen. The run he makes to create the space for Sané.
The run he makes where he lines up the four United defenders in a vertical line is just incredible. And he knows he's doing it, not getting the ball, because he's looking over. He's not, you know, he knows what he's doing, and he's just confusing the United defence. And I don't think the Aguero of a few seasons ago would be doing that necessarily. I think he'd be, give it to me because I score. But having said that, I'm absolutely gutted that he's not scored against United in the past couple, because he only needs one more to go leading
scorer
in
the derby.
He's one behind Rooney.
Yeah. Phil Foden scored the opener against, well, the only goal against Spurs. It was interesting to see, this wasn't in the post-match press conference, but I read that Guardiola had picked him for that game because of the situation with the Champions League knockout and the VAR decision. He'd seen in training that Foden had been young and kind of hungrier.
He'd been young.
But you know what I mean? He was
looking
showing
young, Mikael.
He was showing that kind of enthusiasm that he wasn't being weighed down by the decision.
Mix. Foden's one of those players, like, when he came into the team as well, like, he didn't look out of place at all. And he was so much a part of that team that his mistakes were sort of, I felt, magnified. Because he looked that comfortable, when he made a mistake or when he was trying to force it,
you forget that he's a kid.
You almost forgot that he was a kid, yeah. Because he was trying to force it, and he did make mistakes in that game that a lot of people have glossed over. But your natural reaction was to think, oh, well, we don't really make those mistakes as a team. But then you sort of catch yourself and you think, well, he's 18 years old and he's doing things that other players... Because his late running into the box, not many... You know, we don't always do that, really. Like, generally, you know, it's from one wing to the other where the winger will come inside and then tap it in. But, like, Foden was getting in the box over and over and over again. And to have the confidence to do that at 18 was ridiculous, I thought.
Are fans too demanding of wanting to see more of him?
I think there was definitely... There were some games earlier in the season. Like, there was a couple, like... Not starting the... he didn't start the Burton game, did he? I think at the time it felt as if he was being underused, and particularly the element of that, the fact that you'd be winning 3-0 and he wouldn't be getting minutes, and you'd be thinking, come on. But I guess, you know, he can just turn around now and say, well, he's played him twice in a run-in, starting games.
That Spurs one especially feels like a massive breakthrough. Like, Cardiff is Cardiff. I know they're in a relegation battle, but, like, starting somebody against relegation fodder at home is a bit different, but...
Didn't have to, though, did he? No, he didn't
have to, but that also felt like a bit of the reaction of... There was a lot in the press about, like, Hudson-Odoi starting for Chelsea finally, wasn't there? And it sort of seemed like a bit of a reaction to that.
And did you notice last night as well, and then picked up on the commentary, Foden was warming up on the pitch at half-time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the injury to Fernandinho changed the kind of substitution he was going to make. Mm. But it looked like he was going to get introduced last night. And the amazing thing about that is that you were thinking, he's a viable option now in literally... It doesn't get bigger than Old Trafford derby, than an Old Trafford derby.
Yeah, I was sort of worried when I saw that at half-time. But, like, obviously, Phil Foden's an amazing player in his temperament. But I was just like... My head would explode if I was going to come on. Like, being a mass... And I was just thinking, you know, God... You sort of fear for him as well. You want him to come on and you want him to do well. Like, imagine if he came on and scored the winner at Old Trafford. Yeah. It would have been amazing. But at the same time,
if you in that position.
My head would be completely all over the show. Because of the strides that he'd made in the past couple of weeks, I was sort of thinking, if he comes on now and he just completely ballses it up, like, is that going to be like one step forward and two steps back? But really, you know, level-headed thinking about it now, of course he would have handled it properly and been uber professional and been really good. But it's just because we as fans do have a connection to Foden more than most players, just naturally. Like, he's a Bert from Stockport, like, and you just do really want him to do well. And, you know, it would have been a dream if he'd come on and then scored a winner in the title running at Old Trafford. But I think it probably did make sense to not bring him on.
But
that's
for next season, isn't it? Right, well, when Kevin Keegan earned promotion in style in 2001, he built one of the most creative sides that City fans had seen at the time. A big part of that was Ile Berkovic, one of the early arrivals under the ex-England manager at Main Road. I caught up with him after his interview at City Square earlier this week for a very quick chat about his time at the club. Honestly, blink and you'll miss it. Unfortunately, there's also a lot of background noise, so brace yourselves.
He said to me that City is going to be a big club. We didn't know how much they're going to be a big club. Now they arrived to the point and they are one of the biggest clubs in the world. And when we arrived to City, I think Kevin Keegan told me, just go, enjoy your game, enjoy your football, because the crowd, they want to see attractive football, attacking football, with a lot of talent, with a lot of skill, and this is what we done.
What was it like to be in that team with so many attacking and flair players?
Easy to play. When you've got a lot of good players, it's much easier to play. Everybody wants the ball, everybody can pass the ball. The movement is very good. We had Anelka and Gota up front, very quick guys, so it was very easy to play.
You scored a fair few goals for City. Do any stand out as a favourite?
I don't remember all of them, but I think all the atmosphere and all the view of the club was very enjoyable, and it was a pleasure for me to play in this club.
I'm just thinking about that solo goal against Norwich.
Norwich, yeah, it was one of the best goals, yeah.
What was going through your mind?
Just get the ball and start running, and suddenly I find myself in front of the goal, make some tricks and score the goal. It was a very important game for me because my mom came to see this game specially. I scored 2 goals in this game, if I remember. Very good game.
And a volley at Ipswich as well.
Oh, unbelievable, yeah. It was in the cup game. Cup game, nice volley. Not a bad volley.
Check out exclusive City interviews on our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
Ayle Berkovic speaking to me there. Now it's time to look ahead to the game against Burnley at Turf Moor. Given that United and Spurs are out of the way, are you a bit more relaxed about this now?
No. With the way that the games are going now, it is literally just... And it has been one at a time, so it was like, right, get Palace out of the way, get Spurs out of the way. Get United out of the way. But now these next two are sort of in a chunk, and it just feels like we need to somehow get through Burnley, because it just feels like there is a tremendous banana skin there. And Sean Dyche would love nothing more than stopping us winning the league. You can just tell he's just that sort of character that would absolutely revel in the fact that he's spoiled someone else's party. I'm really, really worried about Sunday.
Well,
really
I don't want to make you feel any worse. But
yes, you do.
Yeah, I do. You're right. But in every single one of Burnley's Premier League seasons, at some point in the season, they've beaten the reigning champions. 17-18, they beat Chelsea 3-2 at Stamford Bridge. 16-17, they beat Leicester at Turf Moor. 14-15, they beat City at Turf Moor. And then 9-10, they beat United at Turf Moor.
Actually, that makes me feel better, because they can't carry on that run. The Burnley, they can't carry on beating champions like that.
That City team didn't travel well back at the end of Pellegrini's second season. You know, one of the champions is Leicester. There are mitigating circumstances for that run.
Yeah, I don't think it means anything, does it, that? It's just a bit of a freak, isn't it? That they've got a big result.
Yeah. At some point in the season. Yeah.
And we've not been that bad against Burnley recently, have we? We've gone there and won under Guardiola both.
Yeah, but yeah. No, they drew last year. Do you remember the Sterling miss?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
It was a battle in that first year as well. But then again, there was Claudio Bravo in goal, and you know it was.
Didn't we score a last minute winner against Burnley? I seem to remember under Guardiola.
No, the two goals in that game were scruffy. Some of the scrappiest scruffy. Goals you've seen.
Yeah. I remember that. But I don't... I mean,
We beat him 6-1.
Under Mancini.
Was 9 years ago, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
9-10, it was Mancini.
That was when it started raining.
And that was in April as well.
Yeah.
It was like 5-0.
Yeah, it was 5-0. Yeah.
And then it started pissing it down, didn't it?
I think that's the Premier League record for the quickest 3-0 lead, because they were 3-0 after like 6-7 minutes.
Mm. Yeah.
Surely we've broke that now, haven't we?
I don't know.
I think Alex Nimley got on the pitch in that game as well.
He did, you're right. To
bring him
second
up again.
Mention.
Yeah. That's a little trailer for the Patreon.
sorry, but no, back to the game. I'm obviously as worried as you can be with 3 games to go in a running, but they don't have a lot of quality, do they, to hurt you? And I just think we'll have a plan.
Guardiola brought up in reference some guy called McNeil as a danger man that I've never heard of in my life. So that's
well,
just probably
been doing all right recently.
That's probably like my lack of knowledge like that. But for me, that Burnley team hasn't changed in about 10 years. Just seems to be the same collection of, you know, hard working British lads. like, you know, there's they don't ever seem to get anyone in from outside. It just seems to be the same collection of players every year.
No.
How much trust do you have in City to get the job done these days? Because you look at, I mean, Guardiola's record in a season and, what, 9/10 of a season, 189 points. You can't knock the ability to get the job done in difficult circumstances.
The one thing that Guardiola brings is, like, over and above, even, like, I know, like, people get really focused on, like, his tactics, because, like, stylistically, because they're quite unique. But the most notable thing about him is how he just turns you into like a winning machine. And that's exactly what we've been the last couple of years. His Bayern team are like that. His Barcelona team are like that. And it's not just about the style. It's kind of about your approach. And
well, it's motivation as well.
Yeah, it's just like you are a winning... You're going to get the job done today. And there's very, very, very few managers
That's why it feels like we've done so well this year without De Bruyne, because De Bruyne just seems like the embodiment of Guardiola on the pitch in that sort of regard, doesn't it? Like, I know, obviously, we've got different captains and De Bruyne never seems to be picked, even though he's part of whatever, the leadership team or whatever you call it. But he seems to be Guardiola's leader when he's on the pitch in that sort of... Because De Bruyne plays like he's a machine that can see every blade of grass. And that seems to be what Guardiola expects of all his players. But yeah, the way that... Even the way, like, comparing against United, the way that we went through the gears in that second half, it's just like that is from confidence that is instilled.
It's a job, isn't it? It's a job you get done. And, like, there's that mentality. And that's why when these kind of games come up now, and I've always been quite pessimistic in the past, I am just much less now, just because of the general approach which we have.
Nevertheless, though, the mood in the away end is likely to be quite tense and nervy.
It depends on how we start.
Yeah.
Depends on first 15 minutes of that game will be huge. I think if we come out of the blocks firing, I think we'll either have the game over within 10-15 minutes, or it will be really, really, really tense
and a slog
all the way through. Yeah.
You can get a feel, can't you, with City quite often, and this happened against United. It happened against Palace as well a couple weeks ago. We'll miss. Like get Sterling last night and such. You'll get
Sterling,
like,
against Palace, actually. Yeah,
yeah. You'll get like a really good chance, or even two or three, and you just think, you know, we should have scored there, but you don't worry because you think
there's going to be another one.
Exactly. You know, you can sort of see now we found our rhythm, and if we can sort of get into that early on against Burnley on Sunday, you'll be able to tell in the first 10 minutes whether we're going to win or not.
Yeah, I'm hopeful it's going to be like the Palace game, because you know, they are a similar... I'd say Palace are slightly better, but they are a similar calibre side.
It took about half an hour, didn't it, against Palace? But you could just tell.
Yeah.
We were turning the screw, the screw. And, you just sort of...
What's your thoughts on it?
I'm really nervous about it. City, in the last couple of visits to Turf Moor, they've had a difficult game, and that, I just see the same sort of thing. I think they'll win, but I don't think it's going to be an easy game at all, and that's basically where you are, to be honest with you. I'm in the same boat as you. If they get a goal early on, then I think they'll be fine.
So are we going to win the league, yes or no, David?
Why? I'm the host. I don't answer these sorts of questions.
Yeah, I know, but that's why I'm flipping it around.
Yes, but I don't think City or Liverpool will drop any points now.
I think Liverpool will drop points. And
your smile is so evil.
I know. Something's going to... If you were to put like a 6-bet accumulator on now for like those 6 results, get good odds.
Yeah, but
you?
I never win accumulators.
No, I know. But the point is, it's unlikely. Even given the sort of the fact that on paper the games are quite one-sided, pretty calling 6 results, it's hard. We might drop points. We've won how many in a sort of row now?
Jesus,
Gareth. You know what I mean? No, what I'm saying is that to call 6 results out is a big call, isn't it?
So you're saying we're going to win the league, but there's not going to be 6 wins?
I think someone will win the league.
Oh, well, that's...
But someone's going to... Someone's going to drop points. So no, my point is, I think I don't want to say it because you just like jinx it. I think we'll win the league, but I don't think it's true that we'll both win six. I think it's more likely that there'll be a couple of games and that will be.
Yeah. I think you've got to answer now as well.
I think it's 50-50. I genuinely think it's 50-50. I think if we get over the line on Sunday, as much as I'm still worried about less, we get over the line on Sunday, it's done.
You said it was done in...
I said it was done months ago.
September, October?
And I also said that Liverpool had won the league after we got beat by Newcastle. So don't listen to me, basically.
Yeah. let's get some predictions on the board then. We're running out of games to raise money for the Christie, a cancer hospital in Manchester. We've earned so far this season £918 in the charity bet with William Hill. Each of our panel gets a £10 correct score single on City's games. Burnley away to come, so let's have some predictions. KC, what are you having?
I'm going to say 2-1 to City.
2-1 City is 9-1, so £90 if you're right, Gaz.
I said 4-0.
4-0 is 15-2, so £75 if you're right.
So yours is less?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
I think it's because you've given Burnley a goal, you know.
Yeah,
I think that could be the difference. Because I've gone 2-0, and that's 5-1 and £50 if I'm right. You've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more information on responsible gambling, visit begambleaware.org. Now then, we heard earlier on in the show from Ayal Berkovic. He was on City Square with Nicholas Anelka earlier this week. Not one to pass up an opportunity, I also spoke to the former City striker about his time at Main Road. And again, unfortunately, there's quite some background noise.
This time, Ali Benabia was there. So I think he convinced me more than Kevin, but because Kevin was there, also I know he was a striker, a very good striker, one of the best, and I wanted to work with him. So the combination of Ali and Kevin made me sign here.
What was it like arriving at a club that had just been promoted?
It was a bit strange for me because, you know, I came from Liverpool, but, you know, I knew I had to do the stuff on the pitch, you know. At this level, you have to do it. You have to be focused and give everything. This is exactly what I did.
When in one of your first games, you scored a hat-trick against Everton. That helped you settle down?
Well, it's always good to start well. I needed it because, you know, when you are new in the club and you've been for a big signing, it's a lot of pressure and you need to be good on the pitch. And it was very good to score 3 goals, of course.
What do you remember about the final derby at Main Road? You opened the scoring in that game.
Yeah, it was amazing because, you know, when you sign for City, you know there's one game and you cannot miss. You know it's going to be hard. And it was a special day because it's something I will never forget. Because I saw in, you know, City eyes, the fans, they were like so happy to score against United, but to win, because the most important at the end, it was not me to score, it was to win against United, and it's something I will never forget.
What was the pressure going into that game, with it being the final one at Main Road?
It's like a final. You know, when you speak to people, you are a true City player when you score against United, and when you win, it's even more. So it was, I knew it was like a big game, a hard game, tough game, but at the end it was very good because we won and they scored.
And what was the move to the Etihad like in 2003?
Well, it was good. It was a good stadium, bigger stadium than the old one. It was the beginning of the new club because it was almost a new club, you know, with the new chairman and everything. We loved the stadium, the new one. The pitch was good as well, and it was nice.
City and Liverpool this season are quite close rivals. You actually scored City's last winning goal at Anfield. It's so long ago, but it's how do you feel about that?
Well, it's a shame because I would have preferred somebody score a goal and win against Liverpool away. But I'm glad, you know, I'm glad because that means I did something good for City.
How did it feel coming back to the Etihad with Bolton, with Chelsea?
Strange, because for me it was my club, and it was strange to come back here. Because I was not wearing the City shirt, and also to score against City here was a bit strange. But you know, it's part of a football player. You know, you have to give everything for your club, and I did it in my life because I've been playing for so many teams, so I was always focusing for my team with who I played. But I will never forget City.
What was Kevin Keegan like to work with?
Very good. He was a striker, one of the best. And when you are a striker and you work with him, it was fantastic because you know you're going to enjoy the training. And we were doing like specific stuff on you know, for the strikers, and he was one of the best.
How did the move to Fenerbahce come about?
Well, I wanted to play Champions League, and this time with City, it was not happening. So that's why I decided to go and play Champions League and to play for the Turkish League, because nobody wanted to sign me in England. So I had a chance to go there, and I signed.
Get involved with the debate on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
Nicholas and Elka chatting to me there. Now then, it's time for Ask the Panel. Get your questions in for next week. Do it on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email us through the website, bluemoonpodcast.com, or we've got a brand new Instagram page as well. You can message us on there, Blue Moon Podcast. Just have a search for that there. First one comes from Isabel Power on the emails. She asks, which former City manager would you have liked to have seen have a go at the job with the resources and players that Guardiola has now?
I think Keegan's the obvious one.
Yeah, with the ultimate checkbook manager. With
yeah.
The result.
Sven is the ultimate checkbook
loved
manager.
Loved the transfer, didn't
but Sven got a league, didn't he? He won a league with Lazio.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you'd probably...
probably pick Keegan.
It'd be bloody funny either way with either of them two, though, wouldn't
it? Well, your thing, you said it a few weeks ago on the show, you wanted to, at the end of that Pellegrini year,
Pellegrini's last year should have been given to Keegan. I still stand by that. Like, because it just would have been loads more enjoyable. Everyone would have known that he'd have only had a year, and we would have got miles closer to winning the league. We would have come valiantly second.
Someone would have had to have found him, though, wouldn't they? Where is he? He's just disappeared, hasn't he?
He was on beIN Sports a lot of the time.
Was he?
I'm pretty sure he was, yeah.
Didn't he say like he fell out of love with the game or something after City and stuff like that?
I think he was in his book, yeah.
I think if you give him 100 million quid to spend, Keegan
give him a war chest.
Yeah.
But I mean, how would it have looked? How would Keegan's team now have looked given the resources that City have got?
I reckon he'd probably sell a couple of defenders and buy some more strikers, wouldn't he?
Yeah, it wouldn't have two centre forwards in the squad, would it?
It'd have four or five.
Yeah.
Well, Mancini wanted five, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, you know, if Mancini was coming back and managing the team, then, you know.
I don't think he wanted five. He wanted Van Persie, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we had four top quality strikers.
No,
at the time,
implicitly
yeah.
Then, yes, he wanted five.
Yeah. But yeah, God knows what it'd look like under Sven. Like, it'd be absolutely mad.
You what? Before players you'd never heard of.
But when he was at Lazio, he had a lot of money then, and he signed
all the best players in the league, didn't he?
He signed like Salas and Nedved and people like that. He signed top class players, like Conceição and people like that. But I think you just think, like, what would our squad look like? It'd just be absolutely mad. We'd have twice as many players if Sven was there anyway, I'll tell you that.
It's a good question. If, not to add questions of my own, say if Sven took over from every season post-Mancini, how many of those do you think Sven would have won titles in? More? Would we have won more or less?
I think we'd have won one.
I think we'd have won one.
I think we would have won... If you have Sven instead of Pellegrini, he wins more than one title.
You reckon? We would have won the Leicester one, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know, because my overriding memory of Sven at City was the fact that in that second half of the season, he just could not win a game for love nor money. He won at Old Trafford, and he won, what, one other, two others?
Yeah, but Sven's bought Koulibaly for 150 million. You know, at the back, we might be, you know, a lot better than...
what he was at the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I suppose. The other one I kind of briefly considered on this one was Brian Houghton for a strange one.
I was thinking Brian Houghton, yeah.
Because he liked a winger.
Yeah, he liked expansive football, didn't he?
From a disaster point of view, Alan Ball, imagine, like how close to the relegation zone, or Hughes, how close to the relegation
Hughes, we kind of did get an insight into how much of a pig's ear you could make of it, didn't we? Yeah.
But yeah, I reckon with Alan Ball, you'd be 16th.
Finally, Jonathan Graham asks on the emails, do you think Guardiola's treatment of John Stones has been a bit strange? He barely seems to get a start these days. And it's a good point. At the start of last season, Stones, his stock was pretty high.
It's really weird. Like, the last... I sort of realised about 4 or 5 games ago, like, oh, he's been back a while now, but he doesn't seem to get any starts. And it was weird because Otamendi wasn't... I mean, we were winning games, but I don't think he was playing particularly well. And he was still getting the nod ahead of Stones. Now Kompany's found favour, hasn't he, over him?
Yeah, so that doesn't make me feel that they've sort of fell out. It makes me think that is Stones 100% fit? Because his injury was a niggly injury, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know how much I can go into it, but there's people saying that he's got like a bit of an unstable, like he's gone through sort of changes in his life, hasn't he, at the moment, which, you know, let's face it, that would sort of change how you sort of play. And he had a very weird game against Spurs.
We were saying that during the game. It wasn't Stones-like at all. And
he was switching off, wasn't he?
Yeah, and it was like the Stones, like I've not seen, obviously nowhere near to the same extent, but I've not seen Stones with that sort of concentration since, like, when we got battered by Leicester away a couple of seasons ago. It was bizarre. Like, the communication between him, Laporte and Edison just was non-existent, and it made Laporte play worse as well, I thought.
Wasn't that long ago where you were looking at Stones and Laporte and you were thinking...
These two are... Yeah. They've got a partnership, haven't they?
And Stones was assuming for the next captain as well, I think, at the time. And
I think next season it'll be back to not. I'm not particularly...
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he probably will be, but he's not... Yeah, I think Pep was thinking, look, few games left here, let's not get over excited. And it's great how Vinny's just the go-to man for the big game again. Like, people have been like, you could probably go back and find people saying things like 5 or 6 years ago or time from retire now. And he's just been like, against United, I thought he was brilliant last night.
You said that, and I was just like,
he had a bit of a mad game, but it was like a mad genius game.
Like, at times he was brilliant, but at times I was like, what are you doing? Like,
that overhead kick to put Lingard off.
Which overhead? He did about 4 of them, but yeah, the one to put Lingard off.
It worked.
He got on it, didn't he? Yeah. He
didn't touch that, did he?
No, he did.
He did.
The ball did moved, yeah, a bit, yeah, yeah.
Oh, but he played like an absolute mad genius last night.
I know, yeah.
And I enjoyed it, but like I my heart was in my mouth every time it went near him last night. I just thought, what is he going to... And especially after the yellow card, I was just like, what is he going
to
do?
Yeah, but that was a great yellow card to take.
Yeah.
It was absolutely the right yellow card to take at that stage.
I think the only thing I would have done slightly, I would have stood up a slight bit more to get him a bit higher on the chest.
It was Fernandinho's fault, wasn't it? He sort of let it go, and he had to make a decision quickly. I know this question is about the Stones, but can we just talk about how much love?
No, well, there's nothing finer than like seeing Kompany's hands flap about when he's doing that strut when he's walking back to his goal.
Oh, the finest! There's no finer sight. Like the sequence of a Kompany header, and then it's fists putting, it's like arms pumping to go and celebrate. Then it's a big jump, and then everyone gets round him, and then he's the last man back in his own half, walking like 10 men. Oh, it's just absolutely glorious.
Yeah, it's my
favourite thing.
He walks like he's wearing 2 coats, doesn't he?
Right, well, we could go on about this all day, but we'll spare you that, I think. I'm not going to lie, over Christmas, I would have been mightily surprised if you'd said to me that City would have had the title defence in their own hands with 3 games to go. Such was the way it felt like it was going after a difficult December. But here we are. On next week's show, we'll be looking at the game at Turf Moor and where it leaves City's bid to become the first team to win back-to-back Premier Leagues since 2009. If you want a little bit more this week, then we're talking about the Joe Royal era at City in the bonus show for Patreon backers. That's available for people who back the podcast $2 per month on Patreon. It works out at about £1.50 each month for 4 or 5 bonus shows, plus regular blogs by me, Richard Burns, and guests as well. So go and get signed up, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. Thanks to my 2 guests, Gaz.
Cheers.
And KC.
Very hard.
I'm David Mooney, and we'll be back next week. See you then.
Was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please support the show. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.